The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perreault columnist for StockEd. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. Now, today we're catching up with Christian Easterday. Christian is MD of Hot Chili, who we've had on the podcast before. Hot Chili trades under the code HCH. Last traded at $1.34 for a market cap of $148 million. Now, I think we all know by now that Hot Chili is... pretty much stands alone on the ASX as being quote-unquote a junior, but with a major copper gold project on its hands in Chile, the Costa Fuego project. And there's some big news out today, which I'll ask Christian to run through just in a moment. So we also know that copper is staying nice and strong, $4.50, $4.60 a pound, and the world is pretty much crying out for new supply sources to be coming forward. And if you are developing a mine, Chile is about as good a place as you can get, albeit there are some issues around what the new government might be doing there, but we'll also get Christian to give us a feel for what investors should be looking out for there. So with that, I'll introduce Christian. Christian, g'day. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Barry. Great to speak again.
Right. Now, Christian, I think we should probably just start off with the big news out today, a resource upgrade.
Yeah, so a long time in the making, a very significant investment by Hot Chili towards upgrading our Costa Fuego resource, which sits on the coastline of Chile, as you know. Previously, the resource was around 724 million tonnes, split between Productora, our original large open pit resource base, and our Cortadera porphyry discovery, which about 18 months ago got its maiden resource of 450 million tonnes. So in that time, we've more than doubled the drilling into Cortadera, and we have undertaken a pretty significant review of the Productora resource. And in addition to that, added our first high-grade resource in terms of a high-grade satellite at San Antonio. So the resource today outlines a 30% lift in tonnage. The combined Costa Fuego asset now sits at about 927 million tonnes, indicated and inferred, at about 0.5% copper equivalent. So what that means in a nutshell is we've moved to about 3.4 million tonnes of contained copper and 3 million ounces of gold in our combined asset. The really big improvements we've seen in terms of the lift of indicated metal tonnes. Now over 80% of our entire inventory is in indicated classification, and that's one of the key targets that we had going into the resource to achieve, so that our pre-feasibility study, which we're forecasting to have complete in the third quarter of this year, has all of those tons available to maximize the mine life and the reserves that we calculate for the pre-feasibility. The second aspect, which is extremely pleasing for Hot Chili, is the high-grade component of Costa Fuego's resource base has lifted by over 50%. We now stand with approximately 170 million tonnes of that 927 million tonnes sitting at a grade of just over 0.8% copper equivalent. So what that does is really give us quite a significant amount of material that will be front-ended into the mine schedule and produce very, very attractive returns in the first 10 years of this multi-decade project. So very big achievement from the team and great to see even the contribution of our first high-grade satellite in San Antonio. Although it's small at the moment, 4.2 million tonnes at 1.2% copper equivalent, look, that resource base in any other company would be commanding a significant market capitalization just on its own. But in the context of Costa Fuego, with almost a billion tons put together, it's certainly going to provide some early high grade tons through our mill which will outline how that shapes up in the third quarter this year with our pre-feasibility.
Okay. With the resource upgrade, you've kind of ruined my second question because I did some research, as I always do, and I noticed an interesting slide out the back of one of your most recent presentations where you talked about the market cap of the company representing 1.6 US cents a pound copper equivalent, compared with about 6.6 cents a pound copper equivalent for peers, a whole bunch of peers around the world. Now, obviously, that implies a major re-rate at some point. When do you think that will actually occur?
Yeah, well, your guess is as good as mine, but what I think in life, Barry, is that value always rises to the top eventually. You know, we sit here in a very similar position to where Craig Williams found himself in the last cycle with Equinox, and we're treading a very, very similar pathway. You know, last year we dealt with all of the why nots with the stock. We consolidated the register back to 110 million shares. We saw the strategic investment from Glencore. We completed a TSXV IPO capital raising and listed ourselves over in the North American market. So what we really did was start to completely reshape the company. We've now seen Nicky Adshead Bell join the board and take on the position of chairman. And that's really all about our pivot towards the commencement of project financing later this year. So we're now moving into the home stretch on our development timelines. And, you know, I think probably where Hot Chili really stands out amongst the senior copper development space, and that's a space which really only has four or five names now. So in terms of, you know, the thematic with the copper sector looking for new supply, and really there are very few major discoveries occurring in the world, as you know, but more importantly, the timeframes it takes to bring on a major discovery into production are in excess of 15 years, and that's where Hot Chili really stands out from all of the peers outside of the majors. Our timeframes to production are the nearest term of all of those peers in the North American market. We plan to have our pre-feasibility complete in the third quarter this year and be in a position to have project financing in place and commencement of construction on this project in late 24. So there are currently no other material copper developments globally that have that timeframe. And that is all about capturing the beginning of this copper bull cycle. And I think that we are very well positioned. So, yes, to be significantly undervalued with our metal payload now at nearly a billion tons, all of the aspects are there for Hot Chili shareholders to really extract significant value as we move through these final stages of development.
Now, in that same presentation, I noticed it was titled Timing is Everything. And you did run through four or five factors that the obvious suggestion being that Costa Fuego's time has arrived. Can you just run through those for listeners who have not seen the presentation?
Sure. And look, I've just got off a 30-hour flight coming back in from Canada where we saw 23 different groups over in Toronto and Vancouver, and look, the roadshow was very, very positively received. Our guys are over in Chile on the second leg of that at the moment, and then we'll be over in the East Coast next week in Sydney and Melbourne and marketing in Australia. But look, the Costa Fuego stands out in a number of respects. Firstly, grade at the senior end of copper developers, the very large projects, upper tier two and tier ones, not very many of them that are going through development. In fact, S&P states that there are 10 developers sitting with over 1.5 million tons of copper that are at pre-feas level or more with lower operating risk. And Hot Chili is a top 10 by that standard, top six actually when you remove some of the major projects in that development timeline, and when you look at the key factors that generate a successful new major copper development, they always come back to grade and geometry, metallurgy and infrastructure. On grade, we are top five amongst the top 20 projects by size in the world. on infrastructure. We obviously sit in probably one of the most envious infrastructure positions out of the senior copper developers, in that we are the only low altitude major play in the pipeline. And we're sitting right next to a port on the Pan American Highway in a top three mining jurisdiction. With respect to our metallurgy, we've been very lucky to get very good metallurgy, the ability to process our ore bodies with salt water and not having to build a desalination plant or a very expensive water pipeline up into the Andes at 4,000 metres. It means that the metallurgy has meant that the project cost is going to be about half of the cost of what it would be if it was in the high Andes. And lastly, on geometry, these are very doable deposits. These are not large-scale undergrounds in hard-to-develop jurisdictions at 600 metres depth. These are mostly open-pittable deposits on the coastline. So those are really always the key factors that play into quality and value, and then it becomes about timing. Big copper projects are built when the copper cycle turns on. In this copper cycle, there is a real inertia of new supply. And I think in the announcement I referred to it, the coming new supply is really a bit of a mirage. The closer we get, the more you realize that these large-scale projects controlled by the majors are really not coming on, and not coming on in the timeframes that some of the industry respondents believe they will. And what that means is that as the world cries out for more supply, there just isn't the response from the copper sector in this cycle. So, you know, to be bringing on a 100,000 ton per annum copper project with circa 70 to 80,000 ounces of gold produced annually, you know, which is a very material project, a plus $1 billion revenue project annually, you know, that really is the last of the five ingredients, which is timing.
Mm. Just to put that in context, 100,000 tons of copper and 70,000, 80,000 ounces of gold, that would have been Oz Minerals' Prominent Hill in its heyday, and bigger than Sandfire's Degressor.
That's exactly right, and that's what has been over a decade of my life building. We are building a new copper major for the Australian market. We are very cognizant that it is one of the leading projects in the Americas, the only low-altitude play, and most importantly, we're very cognizant that these large new copper mines are almost always funded in the North American market, and that's really about our pivot towards our dual listing, and also you know, having an extremely well-recognized and talented chairman in Nicky Adshead taking over the head role in the company. So I'm glad that you sort of said that, because you do put it into context, and you realize that this would probably make hot chili when we get this into production, probably alongside Oz Minerals as the largest copper producer in the ASX outside of the majors.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah, the pivot towards the Canadian market is interesting, because this market, as much as I love it, does seem to have a fascination with high-grade copper.
Certainly.
You know, if someone comes out with a 3% hit, it's off to the races. The trouble is they might find 5 or 10 million tonnes. But a different business altogether, these big porphyries. When you get a billion tonnes, or near on a billion tonnes in Hot Chili's case, you're looking at large-scale, long-term production, not a 5 to 7 year operation like you might get from a high-grade copper hit in Queensland. So.
Yeah, correct. And you know, if I was a junior announcing a 4.2 million ton, 1.2% copper grade on a shallow resource that could be dug straight up in a pit, you know, my share price probably would have just done a couple of cartwheels. but given that these things for us are really just about adding some polish to the front end of a really large project, you know. We also realise that because of what we are, that those things can often get lost. But you provide the context, and you talk about you know, where a Sandfire is in terms of metal production, or an Oz Minerals is in terms of metal production. We are not far off. As I've said many times before, we are really trying to emulate what Equinox very successfully did in the last cycle, which was transitioning to production, bringing on a material copper mine And of course, the re-rate in the Equinox share price is, one of the better re-rates of the past 20 years for any copper company, for any mining company for that matter. It would stand up there with the FMGs or the Chalices of the world.
Mm. Well, I mentioned in the opening there's been some noise out of Chile about perhaps or maybe not changing the fiscal regime there, royalty regimes, that sort of thing. What's your read on all that?
Yeah, look, a bit disappointing from the clickbait media going on. Ultimately, Chile is going through a process for constitutional consideration on change. A People's Congress has been put in place, and some 151 members are going through a series of thoughts on what would bring about new constitutional change for the bettering of the people in Chile, and that process is very healthy. It's very good. But it does mean that lots of wild ideas get proposed, mm-hmm. and that creates a lot of headlines, such as no tomato growing will occur in Chile. I think was one of the propositions. Second proposition that all of the water would be taken away from the agricultural sector and the mining sector. That wouldn't leave much of an economy left for Chile.
Yeah, a few hungry people too.
Yeah, and that all natural resources would be nationalised. So you hear these things, you see them in the media, and in Australia we have a tendency to not know Latin America very well. So you tend to sort of read into the headlines and I guess it has the effect that it has, and people open the articles, and Bloomberg and Reuters and S&P and these kind of media outlets get their win. It's just unfortunate that they're not reporting when, such as 2 weeks ago, all 13 first recommendations were rejected by the Congress. In fact, very few have actually made it through the congressional process. So the Congress has a very important safety net in that there is a required two-third majority for any of these proposals to have to be able to pass before they're even put to Parliament to be considered in this constitutional review. So I guess that what that means is that there is a very sensible process going on here. All of the very far left and crazy ideas that are being proposed that would ultimately lead to the destruction of the Chilean economy if they were to actually be carried, that none of these things are passing. It's just unfortunate the media is not reporting when these things are rejected. So I think the last of the real key things that everyone is watching is the recommendation on the nationalisation of resources. Very interestingly, 2 days ago, that was just rejected via a two-thirds majority.
There you go.
Unfortunately, that was not reported widely in the press either, Barry. But at the moment, you would be asking anyone on the street here, and they would say, oh, no, Chile's going to nationalise its resources. Well, that was just rejected, and it didn't pass two-thirds majority. There is a second and final vote going on very shortly for that, and I just hope that the media, if it is rejected, will report that and we'll get on with life. But, Chile is a Tier 1 jurisdiction. All of the largest mining companies in the world are there. It provides 30% of global copper supply and a big chunk of global lithium supply. It's hard to see how the world goes to decarbonisation and electrification without Chile's contribution. So I think that you could probably take some very good leads from what BHP has just done. It's just invested $100 million in Filo Mining to take a 5% position in that high-end Andean project in Chile. Glencore's investment in Hot Chili and its recent offtake agreement that it's just done with Hot Chili probably suggests that the major mining companies are quite comfortable with what's going on in Chile. And look, I think it's a healthy process that Chile is going through.
But, for sure.
That will play out.
Yeah, well, we did it ourselves with the mining tax there for a while, didn't we?
So. Yeah, a lot of the Australians forget that. We were in the same position in the last cycle, and the rest of the world was laughing at Australia. So, what comes around goes around, Barry, and it's Chile's turn at the moment.
Now look, I'm a sucker for clickbait as much as the next person, but when I frame things in my mind around Chile, I just say to myself, well, South 32 must have done a deep dive into what's going on in Chile before spending, what was it, $2.5 billion acquiring Correct. A non-controlling interest in Sierra Gorda. So
that's exactly right. You know, that's a producing asset. Obviously, it's a bit different to our situation, but you know, that investment is very telling. It's a 20-year mine life. Production head grades are around 0.42% copper, and they bought 45% of the asset to get into Chile. So, look, these are all very good signals for where the copper sector is going, and very good signals for Chile. Our recent roadshow just up in Canada was interesting. We finished each of the presentations and spoke about these noises coming out of the Constitutional Congress, et cetera, and taxes and whatnot. And it was amazing the level of understanding that the North Americans have in regard to Chile. Really, it's their backyard for investment, and it appears the North American market is very comfortable with what's going on. So it would be good for the Australian market to really lift up in its educational levels on what's happening in the third, in one of the top three mining countries of the world, because now I guess the Australians are really arriving in LATAM, a lot of lithium investment, increasing copper and gold investment in LATAM by the Australian market. So, you know, I see a very, very bright future for Australian and Latin American cross-investment in the mining sector.
Okay. Now, from what we've already discussed, it's quite clear that 2022 is a year rich in catalysts for the company as it goes through this re-rating process and marches or heads off towards production in 5 years or so. But just so we can finish up and give investors a clear idea of what those catalysts, remaining catalysts after the resource upgrade, are for the rest of 2022.
Yeah, no, sure, Barry. Well, we've obviously delivered quite a few in the first quarter on time and within guidance. The resource upgrade was something significant that we were working towards. What sits in front of us now is a very, very structured set of goals that we've set for ourselves. We have our internal PEA and scoping study that is nearing completion also, and was just waiting for the input from this significant resource upgrade. We'll look at that and determine whether that will go into the market before the pre-feasibility. If it does, then it's about just providing guidance on the forecast economics of this dramatically expanded copper hub that we're building. Mm. If we do decide to do that, then that will come out within the coming months after this resource grade upgrade has been announced. But it will be probably the shortest time frame between a PEA and a pre-feas coming out. So it's not something that we're factoring in to put in the market, but we'll take a view on that in the coming couple of months. The pre-feasibility and the next resource upgrade for Costa Fuego that will hopefully take this project over 1 billion tonnes of combined material, that is due in the third quarter of this year. We're on track. All of our metallurgical streams, geotechnical, geometallurgical, cost engineering, both capital and operating costs, all of that work is really gathering pace. Our team is over in Chile at the moment on the ground with Wood, our lead engineer that is working with the company on that pre-feasibility. And so far, a number of the big opportunities that we're really going after hard are starting to produce some very positive results, particularly key on metallurgy. That's been a big focus for us. We have a big opportunity to go after low-grade sulfide stockpiles, which you would normally treat at the end of a mine life. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at the various sulfide leach technologies, and that may well offer us significant upside. So some of those work streams are going very well, and we're hoping that will really lead into a very positive pre-feasibility. But the most important thing to get right was upgrading all of that material into indicated so it could make itself into a mining reserve. So look, the key catalysts left are the pre-feasibility and another resource upgrade in the third quarter, potentially a PEA scoping that might come out earlier than that, and ultimately in the background, we have a very active drilling program going on, 3 drill rigs on the ground, $10 million being spent over the next 18 months on exploration, on new targets, which is exciting. We'll find out whether we've got a third large-scale discovery in our land holdings, and about another $10 million going into the development drilling and resource development growth. The rest of the money that we have, some $30 to $40 million available to the company, giving us that 18-month security on our expenditure, that is really just all going in towards the development studies.
Okay, there you go, folks. A significant copper gold producer in both ASX terms and certainly world terms in the making there, and passing the milestone steadily on its way eventually to a final investment decision and production in 4 or 5 years' time. So with that, Christian, thanks very much for your time. I know it was a bit trying on you after that 30-hour return flight from Toronto, but rest up for the rest of the day and we'll catch up with you soon.
Great, Barry. Looking forward to catching up in person soon.
Cheers.